Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. On this episode, I have two special guests, Jeroen from the Netherlands, and I'm sorry, I know I screwed up that pronunciation, and Linda from Germany. They stopped by my apartment in Beijing, China, kind of in the middle of doing a giant circle all around Asia. They left from Germany about 6 months ago, and for the most part, they've hitchhiked the entire way, all the way to Beijing. And now they're basically going to touch the ocean and turn around and head back the other direction. In our discussion, we talked a lot about their trip and other travel-related topics. Let's jump right into my talk with Jeroen and Linda. Jeroen? Right? Is that the right way to say it?
Almost, almost.
How do you say your name?
It's everyone struggles with it.
Yeah.
It's the proper way would be to say Jeroen.
Jeroen?
Jeroen. It's kind of like the R is really in the back of your throat. It's almost like if you're making a gargling sound. So if you pretend you take a sip of water and put it in the back of your throat and make that sound, that's the R. And it's a very Dutch name, but
it's a common name in Netherlands, where you're from.
Yeah, very much. The name that would come close, I think, would be in France, Jerome.
Jerome?
Yeah.
So it's like Jerome.
Yeah, I guess so. Jerome.
Okay.
But then the pronunciation is different. So we say Jeroen. Like the R is a very Dutch sound, not just for the Dutch language, but in the Dutch language you hear it a lot, as well as the G. So the G would be so it's a very harsh sound.
It's a really funny name to travel with. Like everyone asks so many times and they never get it right.
Oh,
like,
it's hard. Yeah.
In Russia, he actually turned into Yuri just for the convenience.
Yeah, and like your name is much better for traveling because everyone can say it.
Yeah.
And your name is
Linda.
Linda, much easier.
yeah, everyone can really say
for me.
Or even like in China now, we started calling him Yelun. Because we thought that might be easier for Chinese people.
Yeah, see, you have almost an advantage here because almost any English name in China is going to be weird because Chinese names are so different.
Yeah.
So you're used to not people not knowing your name. And my name is Dan. I mean, that's like the easiest name possible. And it's really hard for me to just say my name in Chinese for people who haven't traveled outside of China.
Okay.
So I come up, there's a name, Daniar, which is kind of like Daniel, but it's not a Chinese name. It's something they just made up for people named Daniel.
And the thing is, I'm by now very used to it. Like in Holland, I wouldn't even think about it because everyone is so used to the name. But as soon as you go abroad, then people struggle with it. And I used to live in Germany with Linda. Mm-hmm. And even at my job, some of my colleagues after 2 years still said it wrong. But I just tend to accept it. I go with it. You know, I say my name. They're like, huh? I say it again. They try it. And I'm like, yes, you got it.
Even though I didn't.
Yeah, even when I didn't.
Wow.
So and then they just stick with it. So it's also, it's mostly my own fault.
Yeah.
Most of the time, when they look at me and they say something that resembles my name, like, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
But maybe you should, like, try with your surname, actually. Like, just be called John. It would be easier.
John is your last name?
No, it's actually a really cool last name. It's Lange Jan in Dutch. And so, in English, it would translate to Long John.
Long John? Long John is a much nicer name.
Yeah, it fits. Because I'm actually quite tall. So Long John would make sense.
Especially if you wore your long underwear all day.
Yeah.
No, actually, a friend of mine, he has also a Dutch name. And when he would travel abroad, he would always just choose another name because he just got sick of explaining it all the time. So he just told people that his name was something completely different. He always said his name was James. Anyone can say James.
Yeah.
And I guess he liked James, so that's what he used.
Because he's kind of cool, rock and rollish, I guess.
Yeah. James Bond. I don't know.
Jimi Hendrix, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe, I think also many Chinese people do that, right? They just choose different names if they go abroad.
Yeah, they'll tend to choose English names.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but a high percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because we have the same problem. It's so hard to pronounce Chinese names for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing in China is they always put their last name first.
Yeah.
That got me confused as well.
Your family name is always the most important, and that's what you call yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very confusing because there's not a lot of last names in China.
Yeah.
There's some
of Li, right?
Yeah, Li is a very common last name. And Wang is really, really common.
Yeah.
So there's probably, I don't know the exact percentages, but if you walk around and ask 100 people what their last name is, like 3 of them will be Wang.
Mm.
Wow.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
And then another 3 will be Li. And you might only get like 20 names out of the 100 people.
Yeah, this is what I'm scared about because we send our passports to Germany to get a Pakistan visa.
Yeah.
And we hitchhiked with a guy, and he called his sister because she was talking English. And then we talked to her on the phone, and later we decided to actually have our passport sent to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's called Li Sisi, I think.
Li Sisi, yeah.
Li Sisi, and she gave the address of the university. So now our fear is that there might be not just one Li Sisi at the university, and we don't really know where our passports will end up.
So.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gamble, but at the same time, I put in my name as well as a reference, and I bet there aren't many Chinese that are called Yurun. so I think we're safe in that department, and we'll give her a notice as well that, you know, it has our name attached to it.
Mm.
Yeah. But that's one of the downsides of travel. To many countries, you have to deal with visa, and especially for Pakistan, it's very difficult. So now we have to wait.
Yeah.
So you want to go to Pakistan, mm-hmm. and you're in China now, and you've been traveling for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the question then is, how do you get a visa for Pakistan? And
yes.
And what's the problem? They require they won't let you buy a visa from China.
Well, the thing is, like in most of the visa you try to get for any country, you have to go to the country within 3 months. So,
you have 3 months to activate the visa.
Exactly. Yeah. So mm-hmm. we could have applied for a visa in Germany, but then we wouldn't have reached Pakistan before the visa expired already. And with Pakistan, I'm not sure exactly why. I think it has to do with some security issues in Pakistan. They only allow you to get the visa in the embassy of the country you are registered in. So we are both, I'm German, Jon is from the Netherlands, but we both lived in Germany, so now we both need to apply for the visa in Germany.
Okay.
And that's, of course, very annoying because now we're in China and we only have one passport, so it's kind of inconvenient. We hope it works out. But
so you mailed your passports to Germany.
Yes.
And you got word that they arrived, right, in Germany?
Yes, they arrived.
Okay, so halfway done.
Yeah, exactly. I think the more difficult part will be to have them sent back. I'm pretty sure it works out.
Yeah, and like the downside, especially for China, is that you need your passport to be able to travel by train, and I guess for long-distance bus rides as well. I'm not sure about that, Dan.
Maybe. You know what? I don't think I've ever taken a bus that's longer than maybe 4 hours in China.
Mm.
Yeah, but also for hostels, then
hotels.
Any hotel or hostel, you need your passport. Although not every place is so strict.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
In theory or technically, they all need to get your passport.
Yeah. Well, we have copies now, and I mean, we mostly travel hitchhiking and try to always stay like in a tent or couch surfing.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be too much of an issue for us, but of course it's limiting. Like, I mean, if we don't get a ride, then we have a small problem, then we need to like figure out how to get further to Qingdao.
Yeah, because we are now in Beijing, but we decided to have it sent to Qingdao,
where
the sister of the guy we hitchhiked with is living. She's a student there.
This is sounding dodgy, yeah.
And the reason was, we knew, because they said it at the embassy, it would take around 2 weeks for them to process it.
Yeah.
And then sending it by, you know, express mail would take 2 to 3 working days.
Mm.
So if you add it all up, you're looking at 2.5 to 3 weeks minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, okay, we enjoy Beijing. There's some cool things to do in and around the city.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's too long of a time to just be here. And then we were kind of looking at the map where to go next, and we weren't sure. But then we thought of the contact, you know, in Qingdao. And
yeah.
It's 500 to 600 kilometers south of Beijing. So we thought, you know, that might be a nice city we could easily reach by hitchhiking without too many problems.
Yeah.
And then be a bit further down on our road,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
further
also,
south
like,
and west.
We actually thought, like, it would be a cool thing just to get to the Pacific, because we kind of started at the Atlantic coast and,
mm-hmm.
like, in the Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
Then it's, like, this long way east and you reach the other coast. Like, for us, it also had, like, a nice feel to it to actually go to Qingdao and reach
yeah,
the
a
coast,
bit of a completion.
But, yeah.
Although, you know, you could just go to Tianjin and get that same
thing.
Oh,
we will go there first, but then we also heard,
okay.
like, Qingdao is a nice place to visit, and we knew this girl there, so we thought, like, ah, it's nice to visit her, because when we talked to her on the phone, we were like, ah, maybe we're going to visit Qingdao and then, like, just have a coffee or something.
Yeah.
But Qingdao, you know, used to be a German colony, too.
Yeah, we got told so, like, I didn't know before.
So
like,
you're kind of going from Germany to Germany.
A little bit.
It feels weird to put it that way, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but it would be nice, because mostly while traveling, people would ask us, like, okay, so where are you going?
Mm.
And we never really knew. We didn't have too much of a plan.
Mm.
So we kind of go from city to city. I have a rough idea, like, where we want to go next.
And we just always said we go east, like, so.
Yeah, that was basically our answer. And
that's easy, yeah.
In many places, that's just what we said. Like, in when we went to Russia, one of the first things we learned was «Muy jedem na Vostok», which translates into «We're heading east».
Mm.
So every time someone was asking this, we were like giving this as an answer.
And it was very handy for hitchhiking, actually,
yeah.
because it was very clear what we were up to. Like,
oh, okay.
And then we could just
and
say,
so Navostok means east?
Mm-hmm.
To the east.
Yeah.
Vostok
oh, okay.
is east, and
yeah.
Nas is to
east. Because Vladivostok is the
yeah, yeah.
easternmost part, so
yes.
that must mean
I thought
something
that
like
as well.
That.
I tried to ask it one time, a driver that was taking us with, but he didn't really understand my question.
Yeah.
But I had the same thought. So
yeah.
I'm guessing it means that. But I'm not 100% on it.
Oh, okay.
But especially in Russia, since it's so incredibly big, it's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
You don't really realize it until you travel through it, especially when you're traveling slowly, how big it really is.
Yeah.
And the good thing about it, though, is that the Russians are very used to driving long distances as well.
Oh, okay.
So if you say, hey, I would like to go to city XY, and it would be maybe just 100 or 200 kilometers away, they might take you there, but at the same time, they might go way further. And just saying, like, hey, we're going east, and then, you know, they'll
yeah.
say, like, oh, we're going to that and that city. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
it would be, like, 600-700 kilometers, and you just ride with them the entire way.
Wow.
And
yeah.
it's crazy, you know, especially coming from a country that's maybe, I am not 100% on the numbers, but maybe max 400 kilometers in length north to south, and maybe
you mean Germany, or you mean
Holland?
Netherlands?
Yeah, Netherlands.
Yeah.
Maybe 250, like, west to east.
Yeah.
And then thinking of having a ride, you know, like, 700 kilometers long, or even longer.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just crazy.
And actually, Russian roads are not the best,
okay.
at least in parts. And so you travel very slow, like it's,
yeah.
it's really
your average speed is much, much lower than
yeah.
you would have in let's say Germany or in Holland.
But even China, like that was cool. We also got like a 600-kilometer ride from a guy when we were just coming from Mongolia. We got into China at the border there. And then the guy, like, it was like a really luxury ride. He had like a Porsche Cayenne.
Nice.
Stuffed,
yeah.
And took us with to Beijing. So it was like a direct ride, almost like 600 kilometers. And that was much faster than we traveled in
yeah.
Russia. Like,
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Especially like the few times where we had a ride with a rather expensive car. they are more suitable for the baddish roads, I would say. One time we had it in Russia as well.
Yeah.
And this guy was just, you know, like, going straight over these roads. And they had like great suspension, so they can go much faster.
Yeah.
But most of the time we had some dodgy cars and...
like then, Lada.
Yeah, lots of Ladas in Russia. And
Lada
is like the Russian brand.
It's a really funny car. Like, I actually, we loved it. Like, we loved the Ladas.
Only the older ones. Yeah, the new ones, they look like balloons. They balloon up, like blown up. It's like roundish. But the old ones are very nice forms.
Yeah, they look very pretty, yeah.
But the Russians were like, what? Lada? No, it's a horrible car. You know, apparently it's another bad quality and they really don't like it.
They don't like their own car?
No. And especially the old ones they don't like. And they were like, but German cars, you know, like BMW and Mercedes and Audi, and they love that. And we're like, no, we love the Lada. And they were like, okay, these guys are crazy. But we really enjoy driving in some of these cars. But, you know, like the average driving speed, depending on which parts of Russia you're talking about, but like the general highway, like going from west all the way east, which has a ton of traffic, I don't think we would go on average faster than like 70 kilometers an hour. Mm. So I don't know how much that is in miles.
45 maybe.
But yeah. Maybe we should actually give a short introduction what we are actually up to.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about that. I mean, I figure we'll get there.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like you've just hitchhiked from Germany all the way to China through Russia. And that sounds pretty crazy. But what's the real story?
Yeah, well, we left in April, like mid-April.
Okay.
And we kind of started in the Netherlands to say goodbye to Jeroen's family. And then we had a goodbye party in Berlin.
We lived in Berlin.
Yeah.
Lived in Berlin. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now it's, what, September, so...
Like 4 months, approximately.
4 months ago?
Four and a half, almost 5 months.
Oh, yeah, five months.
Five months already. Oh.
Yeah, time flies.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had a goodbye party, left from the Netherlands?
After the goodbye party from Berlin, yeah.
Berlin, yeah.
And, then basically we most of the time hitchhiked in Russia. We took the train, I think, 2 or 3 times.
Let's do it chronological.
Yeah, chronological. So basically we left from Berlin, like, on the 16th, and we were both very hangover from our goodbye party.
We had day one, you did this.
We had a goodbye party on the 15th, and we had some stress to arrange the Russian visa, because after the Pakistan visa, probably the Russian one, or maybe even if you're just in Germany, the Russian visa for us is the most difficult one to obtain.
Yes.
So that was the one thing we wanted to get done while still being in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do like an express visa order. And we were hoping that it would come in on time, because we went into the embassy or like the visa services desk, I don't know what it's called, on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said they probably would have it on Friday. And that Friday was our goodbye party. And we really wanted to leave the day after our goodbye party.
Yeah.
So that was like the one thing that could kind of keep us in Berlin.
Very important.
Yeah. So we had a really, really, really nice last night in Berlin. We got the visa. And the next day we were kind of hungover and still had to do a ton of paperwork and things to take care of. But eventually, at the end of the day, we managed to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And there we decided to take a train to our first, you know, like small destination. We just wanted to get outside of the city.
Yeah.
And we were so glad that we managed.
Yeah, we even got like a last minute couch in Cottbus, which is
couch surfing.
Yeah.
And you hitchhiked there?
No, we took the train because we thought, okay, we just need to get out. And so
it's true. It's important to get started. Like that first step is hard to take.
Yeah.
But it was like we were pretty tired, and we landed in this incredibly nice student home, and we had dinner with them, and then they started playing like charades, and it was such a nice atmosphere. So we decided to join. And that was a lot of fun, because there we were, you know, using our hands and feet a lot, because you can't really, you know, like say what you're trying to portray, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to do like, one thing I had to do was like an optimization process. That was fun. Yeah, they were pretty hardcore.
It's pretty nerdy.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. But the cool thing is it kind of prepared us for hitchhiking later in China and Russia, because it really, you know, forced us to come up with creative ways to communicate.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was good practice. But we had a very long night there as well. And, you know, but after Cottbus, we started hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm.
And we went east. So, you know, if we summarize it, it was first Holland, then Germany, then Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went south into Slovakia, through Hungary, into Romania, then further east into Moldova, then into this breakaway state country that's not recognized as such, in eastern Moldova, which is called Transnistria.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went into Ukraine, then we went up north into Russia, towards Moscow, then we went all the way east, down into Kazakhstan, further east and up back into Russia. A little further east, then south into Mongolia, and now in China.
Mm-hmm.
And roughly, our plan is to go maybe south, but mostly west through China into Pakistan, because eventually we want to go to India. And we try to travel overland, so we try not to fly.
Have you flown yet?
No. Okay. And the only land route into India would be through Pakistan. Because Myanmar has a border situation where you can only enter or exit at the same place where you enter the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can't enter through China and exit into India.
Mm-hmm.
Then Tibet is, of course, for us, more difficult to go to, because we would need a personal guide to
and
accompany us, and it would be very expensive. So we can't, you know, enter the country through there. So the only real option would be through Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
So
China does have a border with Pakistan?
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking at the map of China right now.
Mm-hmm. The northwest,
okay. And then we would go through Pakistan into India, spend some time there, and then go again through Pakistan into Iran, through Iran, probably into Armenia, then into Georgia, then into Turkey, and then all the way through Turkey back into Europe, and then through, I don't know, like,
Maybe Greece, Bulgaria,
maybe like Macedonia, Albania, some of those countries, somehow back home.
Mm-hmm.
That's the rough plan that we have. So kind of like a big circle.
Yeah.
East through Russia, south through China, west through Iran, India, Iran, Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the basic idea.
Yeah, it's cool. How much longer do you think that'll take? Or how long do you plan?
Well, we thought about traveling for about a year.
Yeah.
So like we are then like, almost 5 months and then 7 more months.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes sense. You go to Qingdao, you touch the water, then you turn around and head the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it would be so cool just to put the big toe into the water you know, like just to,
But we quit our jobs and we gave up our apartment and, gave away or sold most of our stuff. We have some of our belongings that we wanted to keep at my parents' place in the Netherlands. But otherwise, we really have no obligations in any city or anywhere.
So if we wanted to, we could also stay longer or shorter, of course.
Sure,
yeah.
Well, do you find that you want to stay longer in certain places so far?
It depends. Like, I mean, the thing is, I think it's a bit mixed because at least I also miss home. I miss my family. I miss, like, having a nice apartment in Berlin and cooking and all that kind of stuff, which you just have if you really live in a place. And I think probably you would also have it, like, if we would decide, like, to work in a place for a couple of months, then you can build that up there at least a little bit. But I mean, it was a bit mixed. Like, for example, in Russia, I sometimes had the feeling like, oh wow, it would, like, I'm also looking forward to going back somehow. But then we were also thinking about, oh, it would also be so cool to still go to Japan or to South Korea and stuff. So it's both, like, it's like still a lot of curiosity about many different places and like enjoying meeting so many nice people while traveling. And also, like, missing, like, the stability I would have at home. I really like my job. I can probably go back to it.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
But, like, I miss that. Like, I get emails from my colleagues or my bosses, and I'm like, ah, wow, this is so interesting. I would also like to work on that now, you know? Like, so it's both. It's really, like, a lot of curiosity. And, I mean, we met so many amazing people while traveling. And also, it's so interesting just to get to know a country that way, because with hitchhiking, couch surfing, you actually meet a lot of people who live in these places, and then you feel like you can actually really dip into the culture a little bit and into differences there, and even just, you know, like seeing differences, like, and I don't know, when we went to China, it was crazy because we felt like we were like aliens or something, like just at the border. Oh. Everyone like stared, especially
people
Yung,
looking
he's,
at you.
He's very tall, like, yeah, like you yeah. are as well. And then like children passing by, like looking after him, like, whoa, wow, and then calling their friends and like really, I mean, that was really like a strange experience, but yeah. nice because these people were very friendly. Like they were not like looking at us in a bad way or
not
something.
Not aggressive or anything.
No, not at all. No, like smiling and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think the one thing for me is that even though 1 year is a long time, mm-hmm. we're traveling through so many countries that mm-hmm. still in some places you really only have a limited amount of time to get mm-hmm. to know that part of the country.
Yeah.
You only see a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is that we kind of agreed upon when we left to spend a little less time in some of the European countries
mm-hmm.
Because we thought, hey, you know, we'll probably end up living somewhere in Holland or Germany
mm-hmm.
and those countries we can more easily visit later on.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then spend a little bit more time in countries that are further away, like China and maybe
Russia.
Like Russia.
Mm-hmm. India, yeah.
And also, like Linda touched upon this before, like Japan and South Korea, we briefly thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we were like, hey, you know, we don't want to just throw in a bunch of more countries and cross them off the list and then race through them
yeah,
just so
that
you've
yeah.
visited. And I'd rather then have that time to spend in China, for instance, you know, to have 2 months in China
mm-hmm.
instead of one
mm-hmm.
And then have that extra 1 month to visit Japan and South Korea
yeah.
as well. Because, of course, even, you know, if you have a few months for a country the size of China, it's not enough to
no,
not at all.
No,
no,
not
need years here.
Not even for Beijing.
Yeah.
Like.
So we're just, you know, having a bit of a taste of it. And
mm-hmm.
But we try where we can to have a little bit more time in fewer countries than a lot of time. I got that wrong, right? A lot of time in fewer countries than a little time in a lot
yeah.
of countries.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And mostly, like, further away from home. So more in India, more in China, more in Russia,
mm.
and a little less in...
Yeah, and actually now I also got really excited about Pakistan. Like, for us it was... First it was like a country where we were like, okay, well, if we want to travel overland, it's like... It's a country we have to go through, although maybe we don't really want to, because we
okay.
were like a little bit worried about the security situation there. And actually it is a little bit tricky at the Iranian border. So if you want to go like from India to Iran... Then, like, the like even in Iran, like in Iran and Pakistan, like this border region is not the safest to go to.
Yep.
But like we started like reading a lot of travel blogs and also more information on it, and now I actually really look forward to visit Pakistan, because like especially like if you come from China, there seems to be an amazing route going southwards to Islamabad. And
it's one of the highest highways in the world.
Yeah.
yeah.
I've seen pictures.
Okay.
It's just stunning.
Yeah. And also,
cool.
like, from the travel blogs we read, like, from people who went there, they had the most amazing experiences in Pakistan, because people were actually very, very friendly, very hospitable.
Mm.
And so I'm now looking really forward to it. Like, and
yeah,
I think, I mean, the fear is still... there, not so much when we go from China to India, but when we go from India to Iran, I'm like a little bit concerned about that, but also not so much, because I think actually like driving with people in Russia was much more dangerous than crossing through Pakistan.
Were they drinking or were they just bad drivers?
Oh, they were like, I don't know if they're like, if you call it like a bad driver, but they were like crazy drivers.
Very aggressive, reckless, just, you know, overtaking
yeah.
left and right, not wearing, especially not wearing and putting emphasis on not wearing their seatbelts. It was
yeah.
crazy.
They sometimes like, they were like quite some police controls. Now checkpoints, and then they just put their seatbelts like held them over their hips,
yeah, sure,
and then
yeah.
let them slip like as soon as they pass the control point.
Yeah.
Like, it was really strange. Like,
yeah.
Well, here in China, it's pretty uncommon still to wear a seatbelt.
Yeah.
And a lot of the taxis, especially
mm-hmm.
the car will start beeping. It'll go ding ding if you're not wearing your
mm-hmm.
seatbelt. So they actually sell a little piece of plastic
to
that
put inside.
You
yeah.
can, yeah, you can put inside the seatbelt holder, so the car thinks you're wearing your seatbelt.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've
yeah.
seen that in Russia as well.
Oh, okay,
it's crazy, especially when you're really not used to it.
Because mm-hmm.
I remember when I was very young in the Netherlands, it was still not that common for everyone to
at
wear
least
a seatbelt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I do know that nowadays almost everyone does it. It's like an automatic thing. And when you then go to Russia and then go to China,
mm-hmm.
and you see them not doing it, it feels very weird. It's like an automatic thing. You automatically grab the seatbelt
and
try to
put
it in.
In the beginning, we also felt very insecure, like very exposed somehow. And then actually later, even if I had one, I even forgot putting it on. Like after 2 months Russia, I was like,
you kind of get used. I never left. For me, the feeling never went away. I always feel like a little bit naked when I don't have the seatbelt on. But you do get more used to it.
But we actually didn't have any. Drunken drivers, like
none of that.
There was one guy in Mongolia that was quite funny, Kurtler. he picked us up and he was super nice. He spoke like we picked up some Russian when we were traveling through Russia.
Basically, we were having a bit of a break and we weren't even hitchhiking.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we wanted to eat something.
You weren't even trying anymore.
No.
Right?
No, and Kurtler just pulled over with his truck, like he had like a yellow truck and. Then he picked us up and he actually explained us a lot about the landscape and everything.
He was good at playing charades.
Yeah, he was really good at expressing stuff with his hands and his body, and then he used some Russian words and he was really really good at explaining things without using too much language.
Yeah, it's okay. Very good.
And he was a super nice guy and was really funny in this truck because it was just going up and down. I think it was
really
one of the most shaky trips we had so far, but it was quite nice. And then he actually left us at a crossroad and invited us to have dinner with him in the truck. And then he actually had a 5-liter canister of vodka.
Wow.
And I mean, he didn't smell like alcohol or anything when we got into the car. And I think he didn't drink before, but then he invited us to drink with him. And luckily he didn't push it onto us too much. We just had a little sip and then, but he was drinking one glass full and then another one water. So that was crazy. But then he just needed to go up another dirt road and he would be home. So we thought, that's
And that's where he dropped you off. So you didn't have to get back in the car with him.
We didn't really have any of that while hitchhiking. And the one thing that surprised me most about, then let's say, Russia, because it really has this name for being a country where people drink loads and loads of vodka.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only country where we didn't get offered any strong alcohol, and we spent almost 2 months there.
Mm.
And compared to some of the Eastern European countries where they drink a lot of palinka, which is a homegrown fruit fermented alcohol, it's just it's insane. They really drink quite a bit of that, and they were like, you need to drink with us, you need to prepare because you're going to Russia.
Yeah.
And so we were, we had big expectations, and we were even a little afraid of being invited over,
because
having to drink.
Because we are really not good at drinking.
No, I can't handle my alcohol at all. And then the weird thing was that in Russia, no one offered us even a single
shot.
No,
we also didn't see anyone drinking.
No.
I mean, we were once passing a village where some drunken people were running around. And actually, once while hitchhiking, there was a group of drunken Russians who also tried to hitchhike. But
true.
But that
in
the Mongolian border almost.
Okay.
But I mean, that were the only experiences we had with people being drunk in Russia or something.
But still, in 2 months, that's a big. That's surprising.
Yeah, I mean, we stayed with young people. You know, we did some volunteering in Barnaul, and there we stayed with students or English teachers who were also studying. And they didn't drink at all. And even before, we also spent a night with some really young guys, and they were just drinking tea and smoking some shisha. They didn't touch alcohol.
No, they even offered us if you guys want to drink some alcohol, we can go to the shop and get some. We're like, no, we really don't need it. And but they just come together, talk and drink tea, and maybe smoke some shisha. But I mean, for me, that was. a bit of an eye-opener. I was not expecting it.
No, me neither. And, I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, but I really liked it at the same time. Because
you liked the lack of alcohol?
Yeah,
because we were really afraid. Like, we already thought about strategies, how we could avoid drinking, like which kind of religion we might belong to.
Yeah, right. It's so true. Like, that's kind of a stressful thing when someone's... like almost forcing you to drink.
We had that in Mongolia. So obligated.
We had one very, very nice experience that was at the southern border of Mongolia into China. And we were staying in the Gobi Desert, like the eastern part of the Gobi Desert, which is also in this like southeast of Mongolia. And we met a guy who said to us, like, hey, you know, if you ever come to my village, you know, you're more than welcome. And he knew that we were crossing the border at this place. So we gave him a call when we got there. He invited us into a very nice restaurant. And then a lot of alcohol was on the table, and they were like really pounding it away. And I tried everything, you know, like from just saying like, no, I've had enough, to leaving a little bit of alcohol in the glass, you know, hinting that turning the glass around
upside down
on the table, and be like, no, I don't want it anymore. So, but they were like, no, you have to drink, you have to drink.
For me, it was okay because I'm a woman, so they didn't really push me, you know? Like, they said, like, I had to drink, I think, 3 or something, and then they said, like, if you don't want any more, you're fine, but you have to drink. They were pointing at Jeroen.
Luckily, they had some empty cans, some soda cans, you know, with water. So I drank one of the cans, and then I started, you know, kind of like... when they weren't looking, spitting the alcohol in the empty can, and then just, you know, pretending. Putting it back, you know, like completely, and then spitting it out. And so
hopefully they're drunk enough that they don't know.
Yes, they were.
It was funny because, like, I mean, I wasn't that drunk because I didn't have to drink so much, but Jeroen was getting really confused because at a certain point I tried to pour, like, water into his glass because it seems like vodka, so that he doesn't have to drink all the vodka. And then he just kept doing what he did before, like just acting like, oh, how do you call that, like bottoms up with a glass, and then like spitting
out the water.
Soda can again. Like, he got really, like, messed up.
Yeah, because, of course, I had to drink some of it, you know? Like, sometimes they forced us to stand up and then cheers and then look at each other and then toss it back. And then you can't really spit it out because it's too obvious. So I did have my share of the vodka. But I don't know. It was intense. That was a lot. But those experiences, I had thought we would get more of in Russia, but we didn't have a single one of those.
And I mean, still, it was a very nice experience altogether. Like, I mean, they even, like, invited us to stay in a hotel of a friend, and then they picked us up the next morning. I think we crossed the Mongolian-Chinese border in record time because they, like, one of the guys was working at the border, so they just took us through everything, and we didn't have to wait a minute. Like, I mean,
yeah, there's like a bit of a weird crossing there. They're kind of strict, but they put you, like, they force you to go into these small jeeps, and then they ride you from the Mongolian crossing to the Chinese crossing. You're not allowed to walk, and I'm not what it's like if you have your own car, but at least there's like a ton of these small jeeps.
It's really funny, actually.
And they organized everything for us. They drove us all the way there. They put us through customs.
They put us
to the front of the line because there was a big line with these trucks. And we just got in the first car, put us in, paid for everything.
But it was really funny, you know, like, because, like, there was, like, this woman driving for us. And we felt like a little bit like in an agent movie or something, you know, like, because there were these people, and then there were always different people taking us from a certain point. And we didn't understand a word. They were just always taking us and putting us into another car and,
like,
then driving.
Like, you're sneaking in.
And also, like, I mean, there were so many of these WAS jeeps, like, it was kind of like a the Russian export car, I think, because it's a really good, like, how do you call that, off-road car. And they were like many of these jeeps, and they were just like at the border. There was like really weird thing going on because people kept like jumping out of the jeeps, then they were running somewhere, getting some paper or something. They were running back like really really fast, jumped into the jeep, and then were driving. And like that happened like when we were standing there waiting for this woman to pick us up again. And then, like, I don't know, like, so many people just came out of the cars, ran somewhere, jumped back in and drove forward. And we thought maybe it's like a matter of courtesy that they know, like, okay, usually you have to wait long at the border, so let's just do everything as fast as possible or something. But okay. It looked really, really weird.
That can be like another stressful thing when you're traveling, when mm-hmm. people do stuff like that and you don't know what's going on, you don't know the language, and it's a stressful experience.
Yeah, but then it's so helpful if you have people that take you with while hitchhiking.
Oh, totally.
And just helping you out and taking care of stuff for you.
And I've had that kind of thing, not exactly that, but similar things happen where I'm like, it's okay. I have to keep telling myself, it's okay. He's helping me. He's helping me. He's not robbing me. He's helping me.
Yeah, because that's like one of the things that you hear a lot while hitchhiking, is even from people that take you with, I'm like, but isn't that dangerous? Aren't you afraid? And I would never do it because, you know, what if something happens? And there's this generally shared idea about hitchhiking that it is somehow dangerous. And we've only had very good experiences while hitchhiking so far.
Really good experiences. Mm. Like
extraordinarily amazing, good. Yeah. I think it really, you know, it's one of the nicest things of our trip, just meeting so many incredibly friendly, helpful people and offering us so much, doing so much for us, and without expecting anything in return.
Yeah, and that's awesome. Really it gives you like a really like this positive image of people, like where you really like, I mean, like, put all countries and politics and everything aside, where people maybe get some friction, but like inherently, like in every single country we went to, people were just so good towards us, like so helpful, so friendly, so like inviting, and that was like till now one of the most important things I got from the travel. Like people just like without anything they can take out of it for themselves, like just being super helpful, super friendly, and not like judgmental or anything, just taking you as a person and
yeah, that's like one of the most positive things out of the trip so far, just realizing that inherently like all people everywhere are good and helpful, and of course, you know, like depending on context and like external factors, you know, or like in groups or whatever you want to call it, there will be some resentment or hatred or discrimination or whatever. But just if you take person by person and you interact with them, like we've only had such great experiences, and it really didn't matter in which country we were. Yeah. Of course, there are differences in the way people interact or with hitchhiking, but basically this one thing that everyone was so friendly, so nice, was just an amazing experience.
With hitchhiking, it was actually really funny in Mongolia.
In Mongolia, yeah.
Because
that was crazy.
In Mongolia, it's like, I think like, well, I felt every single car stopped immediately if you were not even waving or not even putting your
hand. Oh, really?
They were like, and
they assumed
like,
that you're in trouble,
like,
or that you want to ride.
No, they just want to help you. Like they know, okay, probably these guys want to ride, and they just stop. You know, like they like even they had their cars completely full. They just pushed everything to the back and got us somehow in. Like,
even if they had children in the back, you know.
Yeah, they just put the children.
Push the children.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then we were with the four of us on the back seats, and I mean that was like. Like it was even like we stopped the car, kind of like we were standing, they stopped, we saw the children, and we were kind of like, okay, so probably they won't take us, they just want to ask like if we need some help or something. And they were like, no, come in. And you know, like these children just moved to the side, where they were super nice also. We chatted a little bit with them on the way, like they were really sweet. And then they just took us with, and they even invited us to like a gare on the side of the road in Mongolia.
A yurt?
Yeah, there, they really, like, they have, like, I always thought it's a stereotype in Mongolia, like...
like that they all live in yurts?
Yeah, but actually, I mean, of course, not all of them do, but, like, a huge percentage of people actually does.
Yeah.
Like, many, many people still live this nomad life. And I was really surprised, because I thought it's kind of like this romanticized idea about Mongolia, that people would still live in gares there. And so, and then I was really like, there actually are so many gares everywhere, and like so many like animals running around everywhere. And
cool.
So, yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah. And actually then they do a lot of stuff with the animals. So of course, like a lot of food is produced from the animals. And they have something called ayrak, which is fermented horse milk. Seemingly, it also has like a little bit of alcohol. They also make vodka out of it.
Okay.
And we tasted that before in Kazakhstan. They have a similar thing called kumis there. And then like this family also invited us into a gare again, and offered us some Iraq, and we got the taste before in Kazakhstan, and it's really something I think a Western taste has to get used to slowly. Like,
what, really bitter, or?
Oh, it's like, I mean, the thing is, it's not bitter, it's more like sour. It even has like a little bit of sparkle to it. But it's basically, it's like, maybe you know, like ayran or like buttermilk. So buttermilk, like for me, has a nice taste. I like it. But so Iraq has a little bit of this like sourness. Mm. And then, but then really, really, really strong. And like this horse milk taste to it. And for me, it was really hard to get down.
Yeah.
Although like after I tried it several times, I thought, okay, maybe at a certain point I would start liking it. Like, maybe like beer would be for people who never drank beer before.
Yeah,
like,
acquired taste.
Yeah. But it was funny, yeah. So we tried to get our Iraq down. And like,
yeah. Well, we might go there next year, so maybe we'll have to try it. I
mean, you will have to try it when you get there. And they also have like some, what's called curd. Like, it's dry cheese.
Okay.
And that's also very strong.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, like, I was just in India for a month or so, and up in the Himalayas especially, like, the Buddhist people tend to drink yak milk. It's probably kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
And they eat, well, they call it curd, but it's yogurts, really, and a lot of those kind of things. And some of it is just so strong, like, you can smell it from far away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this nasty flavor.
Yeah, I think it's really something where I can imagine that if you are used to it and if you get used to it, it probably it's something you even crave.
Because, yeah.
But like, I mean, cheese for some people is probably like, I mean, like French cheese. Like, if you smell it, you can actually almost lose your conscience. But for me, it has a very nice taste.
Unfermented stuff.
You were even talking about licorice yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of people enjoy that taste. But, you know, if you're used to it and you can't have it, then you start missing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably for them, it's very similar.
Yeah.
If they would go to Germany, they probably miss some of their, you know, horse milk. Or,
Definitely.
Oh, I have that in China. Like, people offer me chicken feet, like, especially if I'm on a train with Chinese
people. Did you try?
Yeah, I've had them. They're, I mean, it's just like cartilage, so it's really hard, but not like bone. You know, like your nose is made out of cartilage. So a chicken's foot is made out of that, and there's not really any meat on it. It's just some skin.
Okay.
So you kind of just chew it for a few minutes and then spit it out, and it's. It's almost like a bonding experience. Like, two guys will just chew chicken feet. And
What is like the most weird food you've ever eaten in China?
Maybe that, or the green eggs are really weird. Like, they have these eggs called a thousand year egg. Is what it's called a lot of time in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's 1,000 years old. It's like green. It just looks disgusting. But it's okay. It's just a little. I don't know, a strong flavor, hard to chew maybe.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the organs that they eat here are just kind of like, they're not necessarily strong in flavor, but they're just really hard to send down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've gotten pig intestines a few times, not on purpose, but when Katie and I first moved here, like, I couldn't read any Chinese at all. And we like to go to cheaper restaurants or like hole in the wall places without English language menus.
Yeah.
They just don't have English.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the restaurants here will just have the whole menu is just on the wall with just Chinese characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time we did this by accident, we saw a picture on the wall that it looked like mushrooms, like in pasta. And so we're like, oh yeah, that looks pretty good. Let's get that. And there were only like three pictures of food on the wall. All the rest of it was just written.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it, and right away, I just knew it was guts. And like, I don't know. I've had intestines in Mexico, and you know, I've had them before, so I know what it tastes like. And like, oh no, we got guts. And Katie wouldn't eat any of it.
Yeah, I guess it's just one of those things. If you're used to it, you know, you grow up eating it, and it's fine. But if you're not, then it's kind of difficult to.
Yeah, but so the things hard, like, I mean, I really like that they eat. I mean, we mostly don't eat meat, but I think like if you eat an animal, then it's cool to actually just eat every single part of it.
It is.
And in Germany, I mean, the thing is like, we eat it too. We just don't see it. Like, we just put it in sausage. So it's like,
that's true.
It's a different grind form, it up, but it's the same stuff. Like,
yeah. It's not. Yeah, for me, it's not the idea of eating the guts that's the bad thing. It's just the texture. It's just really hard to chew, and then so I'm swallowing like big chunks of guts, and they're passing through my guts, and I'm like imagining these like intestines in my intestines, and it's just kind of nasty.
Do you eat a lot of insects here?
I wouldn't say that. No, there's places you can get them. Actually yes and no. There's like the eating cicadas is kind of a big thing in this one particular market, but they also have scorpions there. We can go there later today. You can eat tentacles from like squid and starfish, seahorses, all these really weird things.
Wow.
But that's not a normal thing Chinese people would eat. It's a big tourist attraction, even for the Chinese.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can definitely get that there. There's other bugs though, like there's this northeastern Chinese restaurant that we go to kind of frequently, and you can get like various like insects there, like that are crunchy and high in protein, tasty.
Mm-hmm.
It still wouldn't be like a thing you'd eat every day, but
not
as much of a tourist attraction either. So it's kind of in between.
Mm.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, one thing to remember about China is within living memory of the old people that you see here, there was a famine. I mean, more people died in that than ever. The biggest famine in history.
Yeah.
So when you don't have enough food, you'll just eat anything. And
sure.
So there, I think a lot of dishes spawned from that era. And things like intestines are still a delicacy here. We've eaten pig like heart ventricles and you know, things like that. Chicken hearts. I've eaten chicken hearts before in like in Brazil. They're really popular. Those are actually okay.
Yeah, they are quite nice. I tried them in Germany once.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, like a friend of mine cooked them.
Basically, for us, it's been kind of easy. We don't speak any Chinese, but since we mostly don't eat meat, we just ask for any dish without meat, and then you know that the intestines are out as well.
Yeah.
But I must say, the food here is excellent.
It's so amazing. It's when we arrived, like we got this ride from the guy, and he invited us for dinner, and we were like in the how do you call it, seventh heaven. It's so good, like really good.
Especially coming from Mongolia, because in Mongolia the food mostly consists of meat and dairy products, and that was one of the few things that we kind of, you know, didn't eat too much of. So then
I mean, the food is good, but it's like if you are a vegetarian, it's not so easy to find something.
Right, because it's in the grasslands and the plains.
Yeah, sure.
And in a harsh climate where you can't grow a lot of vegetables or fruits.
Yeah. And I mean, the meat they have is really good because, I mean, the animals are running around outside all day and eat all this kind of herbs and stuff. So, I mean, they don't have like industrial farming as we do have in Europe.
Yeah.
But so I think it's like, it's a different thing to eat meat in Mongolia. Like then
but you know, if you want to eat vegetarian, then your options are more limited. And actually, like for China, the one thing that surprised me is that the food is so different from the Chinese food I was used to in the Netherlands, because there are so many Chinese restaurants and they all adapted their menu to the Dutch taste.
Sure.
So the food that you would get there is very different from the food you get here, and it kind of is more into the, I guess, lower segment, easy takeout food in the Netherlands. And I never really liked it that much. And that was kind of the idea that I had when I went to China. I didn't even know that, like, the food is so great here. So then the surprise, first coming from Mongolia, second having this idea in my head that the Chinese food is not really that great, and then coming here and just like, wow, you know, the food is amazing.
So much good food.
And so that's definitely a nice bonus.
It's one of my favorite parts of living here. And,
I can imagine.
Especially Beijing, because you have people from all over China who live in Beijing.
Yeah.
And each region of China has different cuisines, and they're all, like, really good. And so you can get any of them here. So there's food from all over the country here. Several just from walking outside my apartment. You can get food from, like, four different, very distinct types of Chinese cuisine.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And
it's surprisingly affordable as well.
So cheap, too. Yeah. It's one thing that is it's a strange thing to me because I love doing this, like going out and getting Chinese food. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends who are expats don't really do that. And they'll go to Western restaurants. And if you go to a Western restaurant, you're going to pay Western prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So you get a pizza, it costs $20. Mm-hmm. Right? You get a hamburger, it costs $10.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty expensive compared mm-hmm. with you can go get a really nice meal that's mm-hmm. Chinese food for like $2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm a little surprised. I mean, every now and then I'll crave a cheeseburger, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want that.
Yeah, I can also understand that from time to time you just have this like maybe like feel of having something which reminds you of home or
yeah,
like
yeah.
of something you used to have there. So
I guess yeah, that's one great thing about Beijing. You can get like the best of both worlds. You get the mm-hmm. Chinese side of it, which yeah. is everywhere, and then if you want that Western like craving home feeling, you can yeah. you can get that too.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with beer. There's microbreweries here if you like really good beer.
Yeah,
we had a very nice yeah. IPA, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes, it was like the first night in Beijing. No, the second. No, the first morning in Beijing, yeah.
First morning, yeah. yeah first morning in Beijing. Mm.
Morning. You had an IPA.
Oh. Well, we when we arrived in Beijing, we didn't have a hostel and it was really, really difficult to find one.
Basically, what we tried to do is we tried to find an address for couch surfing and we didn't have any success. So we also mm-hmm. did it rather late.
Yeah.
Because we always kind of, we never really know exactly when we arrive yeah. somewhere.
Nah, I forgot. Yeah, you emailed me through Be Welcome.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how we met. And mm-hmm. I was already hosting somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was just too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah. And we had that with others as well. They were yeah. like, either they couldn't host, but we still met up with them. So
yeah,
it was nice.
That was really nice. Yeah. Because they had guests. And then we
yeah, or they were already hosting. Mm-hmm. And so then we were in the city. We're like, okay, we need a place to sleep. And mm-hmm. like pitching the tent, you know, in Tiananmen Square might not be the best idea.
right.
So then we were kind of like looking around and the thing is, when we tried, or when we applied for the Chinese visa, we were in Mongolia, in Ulaanbaatar, in the capital mm. city, and they force you to have, like, an itinerary for China, so we made, yeah. like, all these hotel and hostel reservations for China that we then later
canceled.
well, you're not the first to do it.
Yeah, I know, it's, like, it's a very common mm-hmm. thing,
yeah.
but then we went to this hostel that we had booked, because we knew that it was, like, that they had low prices, so we went mm-hmm. there. They were completely booked, mm-hmm. and okay. so we knew that there were many places around.
And actually, the prices were much higher than what we had.
Yeah, that went. Well, that makes sense, you know, yeah. when they don't have vacant beds, then the price mm-hmm. go up. Prices go up.
Mm-hmm.
We started walking around, and we couldn't find a free bed anywhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then
we asked so many hostels.
Yeah,
a free bed is in like a not occupied bed.
Yeah,
not as in $0.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, any
yeah.
bed
yeah, available.
And, yeah,
and eventually, you know, we found something through like an online booking site and had a lot of trouble finding it because
mm-hmm.
the
sure,
address
yeah.
was wrong and the maps that we
yeah,
used.
Yeah, we didn't
have
VPN yet, so we used like the Maps Meets, like an open source map. Usually, it works very well, but it's in Beijing
in this case,
somehow
not.
It's, like,
yeah,
a
yeah. but
up.
You know, eventually we managed, and so we got to this.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel and like in the next morning when we went to check out there, there was this Chinese guy that was chatting us up.
Yeah,
and
Captain China.
And it turned out he's working in tourism, so he goes with tourists to other countries and takes tourists from other
mm-hmm.
countries to China and tours them around. And in his spare time, he's a stand-up comedian.
Did he tell you his name was Captain China?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
And he's a comedian. Where's he from?
From Beijing. He's living a little bit
outside. Oh, he's Chinese. Oh,
yeah.
okay.
And
Captain China's Chinese. Wait a minute.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was a funny guy. It was a funny
he
guy.
Really
and
funny.
We were talking to him, and he
made really bad jokes.
He was a lot of very, well, I mean, not very, but
no,
his
funny,
jokes didn't land that well. But he was a cool character.
He was super funny. Yeah.
And he invited us over to this super small place across the street. And we hadn't even heard of like this like tea scam going on in Beijing.
Oh, the tea scam!
So yeah,
it,
yeah,
huh?
But maybe that's, you know, another story. But like, so we were like totally fine. We didn't even second guess it, and it turned out to be also completely fine. He wasn't trying to scam us in any
no.
way.
Yeah.
He took us there, and it was such a small little place. And
yeah.
we asked for tea. They didn't have it. He was like, "What? You don't have tea?" and it, like, I don't know, it was like a random place, and they actually were brewing their own beer. And it was so early in the morning that I was like, I don't know if I can handle. And I was pretty tired from like old traveling and sort of looking around for a hotel the evening before.
Yeah.
But they offered me a little sip of it just to get the taste. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, it was really nice.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that they're doing that here. You know, like small breweries.
And yeah, they're popping up. There's been, even since I moved here 2 years ago, like three new ones have opened.
Yeah, cool. Because the one thing that I did notice is that they really don't drink a lot of wine. And the wine that they do have is very, very expensive.
Kind of. It's becoming more popular. Mm-hmm. You can get a cheaper bottle, but I mean, yeah, I don't know that they make a lot of wine in China. There's a Great Wall is the one that I can think of. Mm. And that's very cheap and low quality.
Okay.
But they make different price ranges. I guess I shouldn't say it's all low quality.
Mm.
But yeah, it's becoming bigger.
Mm.
Beer is kind of the go-to. But the beer here is pretty light, like Chinese beer is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If you want like a good IPA, now we have microbrews. So you can actually get it.
Because the one funny story that I had to think of was when we were in Moldova. Is like this small country in Eastern Europe, on the eastern side of Romania. And it's a great wine country. Yeah. It's not known for it. Everyone knows Italy and Spain and France, you know, as the wine countries. But Moldova has great, great wines.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the vineyards are rather small. And we were talking to a guy that was working in a wine shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us this story that some of these vineyards would get requests from Chinese importers to have like a tasting. So they would have to ask like a sample for them to taste the wine to decide whether they might want to buy it. And the tasting that they required, you know, the amount of bottles turned out to be larger than they could produce in an entire year. Because the scale is so completely different here. Everything is, you know, like anything that you think of as big is small in China. It's just crazy, you know, like it's completely out of whack. And so they couldn't even, you know, produce enough for them to have the tasting, because of course they would want to stock the different supermarkets with the same brand, and they couldn't import it. I mean, we tried to find some here in the supermarket, and I was just surprised because most of the items in the supermarket are relatively cheap, I would say. Not too expensive.
What, here?
Wine, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wine was...
maybe compared with what you're used to. I guess it just kind of depends on your reference point, things like wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I find them to be relatively similar to what I'd pay at home.
Okay.
Although I'm not really into wine, so I don't know that much.
Okay. Yeah.
My problem is my wife, Katie, she likes a slightly nicer wine.
Mm.
And I couldn't tell you the difference between a $50 bottle and a $5 bottle. I don't know. They all taste like wine to me. So I honestly don't even care. So I get like the cheapest one possible, which is like 18 kwai for a bottle.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah.
I went in the supermarket. I couldn't find anything that was like below, I guess, 90.
Oh, there's a couple of supermarkets here that are more catered to Westerners more.
Mm.
Maybe you went to one of them. And they tend to, that's like the cheapest wine you'll get.
Mm.
If you go to a Chinese shop, you'll get much cheaper.
Okay.
All right.
Maybe we'll go later today and I can show you.
But I guess the one of these small breweries would be nice to visit as well.
Yeah.
We could do that. Yeah. Okay. Especially tonight. Once Katie gets home, she's always up for that.
Yeah. Right. Nice. Yeah.
Sounds like a cool
idea. Yeah. We'll check all of that out. We should wrap it up. We've been talking for about an hour. And actually, though, before we stop, I wanted to do like a public service announcement. You made this reference to this tea scam. And I'll just explain what that is.
Briefly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing.
Like, it's never happened to me. But I met someone once who told me that it happened to them, and I kind of felt bad.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you're in, usually like in Beijing, you'll be in a touristy area, and someone comes up to you who's Chinese, and they say, oh, hi, it's really nice to meet you. I'm practicing English. I want to learn English. And would you like to go speak with me? And I can teach you about my country, and maybe I can learn some English.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, wow, that sounds great. I'd love to meet a local person. And then they say, okay, well, why don't we go have a cup of tea in a tea shop? And so you go to the tea shop, you order a pot of tea, you have a nice conversation with the person, and then it comes time to leave, and you get the bill, and the bill is like 300 kwai or 400 kwai. Like,
crazy.
Yeah, crazy expensive. A pot of tea should cost like 30 or or 25 or something, and they'll charge like 400.
Mm.
And that's the scam. Then you're stuck with the bill, and you have to pay like in dollars, you might have to pay like $60 for a pot of tea, which is totally ridiculous.
And I think they even say like, okay, we call the police if you don't pay and stuff.
Yeah,
and
they might get aggressive with you.
They don't have any money with them, like, so you're the only one who can pay.
And as a foreigner, like, you don't know what to do. Like, you can't, like, there's no way you're going to talk your way out of it with the police because you don't speak their language, and the police aren't going to side with you because you're not from here. So you're kind of stuck.
And it seems to be also happening with, like, people wanting to take you to the art district, like we...
galleries. Right? So there's, like, in tea houses and art galleries as well, where they then, if you, you know, at the end of the day, that they give you, like, a... a big bill as well that you have to pay. And so we got many warnings about that later.
Yeah, but we got the nice Captain China then.
Let it discourage you. Most people here are very friendly. Crime rate is very low. And this is it's a scam, but it's not. There's far worse scams in the world, but this is more of a common one in China.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty easy to avoid too. You can just say, oh yeah, I'd love to talk, speak English with you. Let's do it right here.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to get tea. No, I don't really drink tea.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get a bottle of water.
Well, even like, I think like you could even get to the police because they know these people. Like we talked to a guy and he said he knew about the scam and he once got approached by these guys and he was like, oh, okay, I'm just going with them. Like I just want to see what it's like. And then he wanted to write like a blog entry about it.
So he knew it was a scam.
He knew it was a scam, but he completely went with it. And then he even paid the bill in the end. And then he kept watching and filming these guys afterwards because they'd always go back and get new people.
Okay.
And then there were like these two girls going with them and he actually, he went after them and he got in there and was like, okay, you know, like, I know exactly what you guys are doing. I want my money back now. I have all your pictures here. And like these girls, like they were really confused. Like, oh, wow, what's going on? And they were like really like going out. And actually the police, he said, like they knew these people. So they even like sometimes when they see foreigners going with them, they say like, ah, no, don't go with them.
You know, so they do help. Okay.
They do help and they know about, for some reason, they don't do enough. Like they could of course also prosecute them.
I don't know whether they do something that is really illegal.
Yeah, maybe they don't because they just put a huge bill there. So
If you have it clearly written that the tea costs $60, you know, like in Chinese currency, and you order it and you drink it, then like what is illegal about it?
There's no problem then. Yeah. But I guess you just tend to assume that it's going to cost something. And it's almost like they're playing on your Western sensibilities to like, well, it's rude to ask the price, but in China, it's never rude to ask the price of something. You can, you can talk about money very openly here.
Yeah.
I mean, people pay each other cash and they'll just whip out a lot of money in cash just on the street or in public for, I mean, nothing for not illegal things, but like some people will go teach English here and they'll just get paid cash and everyone knows exactly what they're making. And it's, it's much more open here, at least in the States. Like for, if you have a job, no one knows each other's salary generally, for most jobs. And it's kind of taboo to even talk about it. And so they're almost playing on your own culture against you that you won't, that's like, oh, I don't want to make them feel bad by asking how much it is, or I don't want to look like I'm cheap, but it's always fine to ask here.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to avoid these situations then.
Okay, so that's our public service announcement. And finally, you guys have a website. Do you want to just talk about that quickly?
Oh, well, like we just have like a small blog and we write about what we do and like what we, the people we meet, and we have some small videos there. So if you want to read it, feel very welcome. It's called way-east.com.
way-east.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put up a link. Or do you want me to put up a link?
Yeah, you can.
Do you want people to
read it?
Sorry, I didn't.
Like, I guess everyone's welcome to read it. Like, we are happy about everyone who's reading it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Since it's public, I thought it would just be fair game to mention.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Nice.
Well, maybe we'll get a few people reading your site.
Cool.
Then. Yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of like really interesting stories, and your general story of just hitchhiking everywhere is really cool. I think, like you guys were saying, a lot of people would be just terrified to try it, and it's It's just one cool thing to like share your experiences so that maybe people will be a little bit more open to traveling in not exactly how you do, but to being more local, getting to know more local people. And not the ironic thing is here you're talking to an American, not a Chinese person.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
So like, but you're kind of meeting a local person in a,
I mean, you're
in
living
a tiny
here, right?
way. I do live here, but I'm not Chinese. But anyway, yeah, people might gain some inspiration from you. So that's like really awesome that you're putting some of your stories online.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like hitchhiking really has been such a positive thing during our travels that I can only recommend other people to do the same. And just this idea of, you know, unknown people meeting each other, talking to each other, getting an understanding for each other, I think is a very nice idea. And especially... for us and for all the other hitchhikers that we've met, we've really only heard like very positive stories about it.
And all the negative ones are sitting in a basement with duct tape over their mouths so they can't talk. <about it.
laughs> Yeah, luckily I've never heard a story like that. So you know, the one thing I would want to leave off with is just that, you know, like if anyone thinks about doing it, it might be nice to do it with someone together. It's always a good idea to try to be on the safe side, but really don't be too afraid about it.
I think like one more thing is like if you are like a woman, of course you're more like easily victimized, but I think most of the time you also don't have to worry because most people don't want to do you any harm. And I think the most important thing is just that you know for yourself what you want and what you don't want, and that you can make that clear, and then you're pretty safe out there.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, great advice. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah, let's go check out Beijing.
Yeah.
Let's get some IPA.
All right. Let's do it.
Woo!
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.